Wednesday, August 17th, was a day of high adventure of my own very individual kind. In the morning, Dr. and Mrs. Donovan Carell and I went in search of flower seeds. It all began when I saw some bluebells in the Christian church in Johnson City. I had tracked them down as coming from Mrs. Gibson's ranch, a part of the Bruckner Ranch. Dressed in blue jeans and boots and sun hat, I set out on this carefree expedition. But it turned out that I had to go back and get Mrs. Gibson for a guide. She had known Lyndon all his life. She was a Bruckner. She wore a sunbonnet. She had that delightful combination of dignity, friendliness, and simplicity that I fondly and probably quite wrongly imagine to be possessed mostly by country people. She was glad to drive us over to the field to see the bluebells. Yes, they'd been blooming all summer, a vast sheet of blue. We went south through the pastures, gradually climbing, till Johnson City was in the valley below us. Lovely pastures dotted with large live oaks. And then finally we emerged on a wide grassy meadow. In full sunshine, there was a tank. The land was moist and rich. And there were hundreds of bluebells still in bloom, though they had been at their peak, she said, 2 weeks or a month ago. Dr. Carell identified them as a member of the gentian family. Their Latin names defeat me. Repetition has not educated me yet. He was excited. He got out and took pictures and looked. He said he'd never seen so many before in all his searching for wildflowers across Texas, across, in fact, the United States. He cut open one of the seed pods with his thumbnail, but no, it was still wet and sticky and green. But you could see the dozens of tiny seeds that in time, when they were dry, might possibly be propagated by spreading them out in some other meadow. We tried to pick a few. The consensus was they were simply not ready. Mrs. Gibson said we could come back any time and get all we wanted. There's a generosity of spirit in people who do not have a great deal. We were having a marvelous time. The sun was beating down and the day getting on. So since we couldn't gather seed, we took Mrs. Gibson home and left for the Diamond X Ranch. I had talked to Nita and she had told me we could come out and pick as many mountain pinks as we wanted. As we rolled over the barren Caliche Hills, we passed two air-conditioned carry-alls, a kind of giant jeep loaded with tourists. Melvin had some local boy showing them his Noah's Ark of native deer and antelope and buffalo and longhorn cattle and wild turkeys and the strange exotic deer, sika and axis and bighorn sheep, and the dinosaur tracks. The mountain pinks, which are like a little nosegay of tiny pink flowerets, hundreds of them, completely covering the straw-like stem so that it looks like a delicate pink powder puff, grow in the most incredibly barren caliche soil, preferring a hillside strewn with rocks. Mm-hmm. They're past blooming now, just little globes of pure straw with here and there a pink blossom. And Dr. Carell thinks they must have dropped millions of seeds where they are. But when we saw a hillside offering a few, we got out and began to walk. We found more and more and more. From each, we took half of the little globe, leaving the rest for Nita's hillside to make sure that prodigal nature left its abundance. We stuffed our trophies in envelopes labeled White House until we had about 3 bulging ones. And then, hot, successful, and happy, we headed back for Johnson City, stopping at the boyhood home long enough to have some cool lemonade with Jesse and look at the grounds, which were in really very good shape, except for the roses and wisteria needing some iron sulfate. We drove around Johnson City to the old fort site, and I told him about our plans for it within the next year. And then returned home for lunch, ravenous, happily weary, with that very pleasant weariness that comes from exercise outdoors under a hot sun. Dr. and Mrs. Carell told me about some of their adventures when he had been part of a botanist team in search of a plant that produced cortisone. It had just been discovered, and it was a good hunch that it could be produced in a plant. About other plants that he had found and isolated were toxic to stock and that ranchers wanted to identify and get rid of. About the whole basis of Texas research, which is financed by Hoblitzel and Bill Lynch and some wealthy Texans who think that research is a key to better agriculture and want to pursue it in their own way rather than just depending on the government, though there's a great deal of collaboration and I expect of grants. After lunch, we drove through the Martin Ranch, and in the broad open meadow Between Leela's and a tank that holds water fairly well and the curving road itself, I put out my few bluebell seeds. And along the highway, an impossibly barren stretch of caliche, we crumbled up and let fly the tiny little bouquets of mountain pinks. And then back into the main house, where Dr. Carell showed me some of the plants he had picked, pressed, and preserved between sheets of paper. Thousands upon thousands of them, and somewhere through it all running a thread of purpose. When they left, I tried to take a nap, unsuccessfully. And then, about 4:30, set out on my river walk, my own special self-indulgence, which at this point is something less than an absolute favorite with the Secret Service. I wore tennis shoes but carried my boots to appease Jerry, who worries about a rattlesnake biting me. We drove for miles through rough country, Claude Boyle's ranch. He has a marvelous crop of wild Texas persimmons, and the deer are getting fat on them, Clarence tells me, as well as the goats. It turned out to be one of our best river walks. We began on Claude Boyle's ranch, where the best estimates were that it was between 3 and 5 miles to the hill house. And by the time we started, it was about 5:10. When we were walking on a sandbar, sinking up to our ankles, or crossing the log expanses of shale and fault and tumbled boulders, I wore my tennis shoes, but when it came to the deep grass, stopped and put on the boots, which grew heavier every mile when I was carrying them. We saw no rattlesnakes this time, but Clarence saw a water moccasin, and then presently we saw another snake, which he could not identify, doing something I had never seen before. He had caught a small catfish, about 3 to 4 inches long. He had him crossways in his mouth, and he was swimming in his graceful undulating curve, heading for some quiet spot to swallow his prey. Clarence said that the fish was probably already paralyzed from the bite, if not dead, that the snake wouldn't eat again in several days. This was a large meal. Once we saw a turkey hen flying across the river, great bronze wings widespread. And then, in just a moment, in succession, following her, 4 small turkeys, perhaps 2-month-old poults. Often we saw deer coming down to the water to drink. We were in the part of the river where the sound of rapids accompanied us almost all the way, either behind us or in front of us. And then once we came to a long stretch of clear, beautiful, deep green water. It lasted for nearly a mile, but we never heard the great roar of rapids would have indicated we were really approaching John Hill Ranch. And we tossed out the 3-mile estimate as the sun kept sinking and the pedometer kept on registering 3.5, 3.75, and still no sign of the high cliffs and the rapids. But presently, up in front of us, far in the distance, we saw a house with a tall TV aerial on a hilltop. It must be the Hill House, but how far? The sun was rapidly sinking. It would be dark in another 30 minutes. And what's more, we were on the far side of the river and had to cross. Once they had been a delightful adventure, and the path that we were walking grew narrower and narrower, and suddenly ended with a huge boulder that jutted out over the water. And there was nothing to do but step in the water and wade around. Clarence first found it only knee-deep, but then he could take a long jump first. And I, thinking of all the water snakes we had seen along the way, stepped in on slippery rock and was soon wet to my waist, but in a moment safe on the other side. And it only added to the pleasure of the adventure. With dark approaching, there was no time for delay. We must get back on the other side of the river and find a road where the agent, who by this time had picked up John Hill's foreman, could make their way in the jeep down close to the river. Just at twilight, I saw a beautiful green slope covered with huge cypress and pecan trees on the other side. But between us, a long, deep pool. Down ahead of us, we could still see what we thought was the Hill House, but it grew no nearer, and dark did grow nearer. We were in touch with Ben Blossoman. Yes, they knew the place we meant. There was a road down to it. It would be there in about 20 minutes. So we walked as fast as we could over the rugged boulders, downstream to where a fault had laid an almost perfect angular row of stepping stones across the river. There were little shallows, little rapids, because you could jump or wade through. But a long fault, probably 1 or 2 city blocks long, cut across the river at an angle so that we were heading almost back west into the fading sky. And if you'd been a good jumper, you could have made it dry shod. On the other side, as we approached, the grassy slope I'd seen became more and more surprising as we saw a barbecue pit, a table made of a huge stone placed on two upended stones, some benches, and some beautiful pecan trees, and some giant cypress trees like patriarchs that had withstood the flood of 52. I went up to the largest one, and at my chest height stuck out my arms to see how near I could reach around it. I asked Jerry to see if the two of us could make it around the trunk. Clarence stood off and watched and said, "No, it'll take four or five." It is so surprising along the river to see any touch of mankind. And we wondered when and by whom this charming spot had been used. The ultimate touch was a swing hanging from a limb of the cypress tree. And I swang like a child until we saw the lights of a bronco coming down the steep hill to the river. Then we started walking, and by the time we met the bronco partway up, Clarence's pedometer said 4 3/10 miles. I looked over my left shoulder, and there was the perfect little silver sickle of a new moon, the final blessing of a perfect day. I was at home by 8:30. Jesse Hunter had come out to join me for a dinner by the pool by candlelight. We talked about plans for a party for the hostesses at the Johnson City House and at the old Johnson farmhouse. We decided we would get all the ladies together for one party, even though it would be too large to have the intimacy I like best. They would show them a movie of Lucy's wedding. She's full of her job. She does it so well. We are so fortunate to have her. And so ended a day that had brought its own particular bounty to me of sunshine, exercise, and adventure, and scenes to remember.